help it, he will.
It's the Skinny on Sports Podcast with Aaron Cowan.
I throw balls far. You want good words? Data language.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Cowan with the Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP!
Good Wednesday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to the Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, the Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. Listen, I'm not going to say I told you so, but for one night at least, I told you so.
I think I know what you're referring to, but you're not talking to me. I
know. I'm talking to anybody. Just, hey.
Maybe a few of those guys on the show before us.
Just No. Just whatever. Just anybody.
Okay.
Listen, you don't get to be right very often. And listen, it's not like we're totally right for a career, but by golly, for one night, at least we were right once about Chet. Man, he was awesome. We'll talk about that. Okay, kids, regional baseball tournament, some starting today. Across the state of Oklahoma, some will start tomorrow. Kind of give you a rundown of who all is going to be playing in those. Man, it's like every time we get off of the show, there's something new about the Big 12. And it's like it re-energizes the topic of conference alignment. I mean, it wasn't 30 minutes after we got done with the show yesterday that CBS's Dennis Dodd is reporting, hey, whoa, it's not just those four. Looks like Oregon and Washington could be involved as well. And so is the Big 12 really going to be the first one to 20? I mean, what in the world is going on? We'll talk about that. Try to figure out where it's headed. I have a theory. I have a format that I'll share with you. See what you think. Do you even like talking about this? I love conference realignment. I almost like it better than the games.
Really?
Yeah, I love it. I think this is intriguing stuff. Just to figure out, okay, where is it going? How is it going to end?
Right.
Well, here's the question, though, with what I'm going to share with you on my thoughts and a possibility of what could happen. Is it too much like the NFL? So we'll talk about that. And then, like I said, disregard everything I said about it's just summer league. Don't get too excited. Disregard all that. All aboard the Chet Express, baby.
I do have one critique, though.
Oh, goodness. I can't wait to hear that.
Okay.
225-9698 is the phone or the text line. 225-9698. Give us a call. Shoot us a text. We can talk about any of those things or whatever else might be on your mind. Feel free to chime in at 225-9698. If you're going to be outside the listening area, a couple ways to stay in touch with the show. One of those is log on to KADSAM.com. The other is to download the Paragon Communications app. The app's got it all. It's got the three radio stations here in Elk City. It's got the Penny News, brand new edition of the Penny News. Hit the website last night at midnight at thepennynews.com. The big boss man is already on the way to pick up the print edition, so you can check that out tonight in some locations. It'll be filtering out there tomorrow for sure. Go pick up a free copy of the printed Penny News. Big Elk TV, Paragon TV, only a couple of months away from football action on both of those. And, of course, we've got Skinny on Sports, Sports Podcast. If you missed the show entirely, you can go back and check out what we had to say each and every day on whatever topics we were discussing. Hello, Jared.
Well, you're enthused with what you saw last night.
Oh, man.
I had to keep pumping the brakes because it's just one summer league game.
Here's the deal. Here's
it's one
the deal.
Game.
It is just one game, and I'm not sitting here saying, oh, yeah, Hall of Famer, look out. 9-time MVP. No. But here is what you want to see, right? When you're drafted that high, playing in the summer league against your peers or guys of the same ilk. There's some guys that have been in the league for a couple of years, but they're not names. They're names that you remember more from college than you do for what they've done in the NBA.
Like that Taco guy.
Yeah, like Taco Fall. He's 26 or 27.
Yeah.
The only reason he's everybody knows who he was because he was the big giant dude for UCF that almost upset Zion's Duke team.
Right.
You know, and so he's kind of a – he's like him or, you know, like Jared Butler. They were highlighting him a bunch last night. Baylor, the guard from Baylor that's in his second year. So, it's, you know, it's guys like that. And what you want to see is the second overall pick not only look comfortable in that setting, but really you kind of want to see him not necessarily dominate the way he did. I mean, that's even better. But for sure not look like he's lost.
Right.
And like he doesn't fit. Right. And that's as far away from what we saw last night as it could possibly be.
I was wondering, because there was some sloppiness to it, and I get it. This isn't your all-stars playing right now. It's guys that are either A, trying to make a team, or B, like you said, they're just drafted and they're trying to get their feet wet. So there's a little sloppiness to start, but once everything kind of settled down, you saw some of the stuff of why Sam Presti was so high on this guy. But, man, the confidence level he had was through the roof, and he looked the part. He's definitely set a bar for each time he touches the court now. Everyone's going to look at him and go, what's he going to do tonight? But it was clear why Sam likes this guy. Very clear. I saw a mixture of Durant
I almost fell off the couch when he hit the one-legged Dirk shot.
The Dirk, thank you, Nowitzki. Yes, that's where I was going. When he put that move on and the fadeaway one-legger, it's exciting. The pairing with him and Giddy are fun. And, I mean, my phone is blowing up like, oh, this is the next dynamic duo. I'm like, you guys forget there's a guy named SGA on the team, right?
Exactly.
What are we saying duo for? Why not trio? But future's bright. It was fun. It was fun last night.
At least for one night, it was.
Held my breath when he went down with, I don't know what it was, some leg.
Ankle tweak
thing. And that's going to be the worry, is the stature and the build. They're talking a lot about how, you know, he's going to put on weight and or attempt to, and it's going to have to do it the right way and still be effective. So we'll see where that goes, but I mean we said it all the time. Durant came in skinny as a rail, and he's developed into a nice player. Of course, he did what he did in Oklahoma City. You know, it's a similar path it looks like for Chet Holmgren as far as his player development and physically development too. And remember, he's just 20, and he's 2 years removed from high school. So it's very very exciting.
It's exciting is the right word. Listen, I mean the comparisons are natural with Durant just because of the way they look.
Yeah,
you know, the tall, skinny, can shoot. I mean, but that's where it stops, at least right now. But I think for those that hadn't really seen him play, and it wanted to make the laziest comparison of all time with Poku. Listen, right now they were on the floor together last night. Chet Holmgren is so much better than Poku is right now already. It's not even close. Okay, so enough of that. Enough of, oh my gosh, he's going to be another Poku. No, he's not. He's already, he may already be better than Poku will ever be right this second. And that's kind of sliding Pokuševski, but we just haven't, he's got a lot further way to go than what Holmgren does, obviously, and just after just one game. But here's the thing. The offense was awesome. He was 7 of 7 on twos, 4 of 6 on threes, didn't miss any of his 5 free throws for 23. That's almost a bonus here early on. What he was able to do on the other end is what has to make you so excited about the upcoming season. Because as he got going, you could see him affect the Jazz players on every possession. If somebody got beat off the dribble, they looked up and went, uh-oh, he's already blocked 3 shots. You know, even in the first quarter, he was already affecting the way that the Jazz guys were penetrating. They were stopping because they saw him. Like, it took him that long. I mean, when he dunked that, when he blocked that dude that drove it down the baseline trying to dunk on him with two, and he blocked it with 2 hands, that was like, that's when the rest of the other team went, holy crap. Okay, so that's not working, you know, and that's where I think, at least early on, that's where his biggest impact is going to be, and he's going to be able to make one on the defensive end. Now, when he plays better players and better perimeter players, can he get out in the pick and roll? Can he move well enough out on the perimeter? Looks like it. You know, I think naturally everybody's going to be worried about him getting bullied. Well, okay, Giannis might bully him, but guess what? Giannis bullies everybody. Ask DeAndre Ayton about Giannis from the finals 2 years ago. You know what I'm saying? I mean,
yeah.
So to go, oh, yeah, he can't guard. Well, neither can anybody else, okay? But the thing that I think people are going to be – the people that didn't watch the Memphis game, specifically the Memphis game in the tournament, and the reason why I bring that one up is because of Jalen Duren on the other side. Big, physical, strong dude that was in this draft too. And guess what? He more than held his own against that guy, okay? And so I think that's going to be the thing that for Thunder fans or just for NBA fans that haven't really seen him play much, you're going to be shocked at how much he battles, that competitive spirit. It was awesome against Duren from Memphis that night. And he more than held his own against him down on the block. And I get it. There's going to be some guys. There's going to be some times where we're going to see, you know, it's going to be the meme of the day, him getting shoved around by some big giant dude down low. And it's going to be like, oh, he can't do it. Yeah, he can. He can, especially defensively early. And here's another thing. You mentioned with Giddey, that partnership. I mean, it looked like they've been playing forever together. Like they knew right where each other was going to be already. But think of the space on the floor that he can operate with when you've got Giddey, SGA, Dort sitting over there in the corner. Man, it's just like, I know it's one game, and he could go out there tonight and not play worth a flip, and then we're going, oh, never mind, bust. There's the bust potential we all talked about going into the draft, da-da-da. But you see why. He was able to show you last night all the tools in the toolbox and show you why you take a chance on that guy at that spot because of what is possible. And that's why you pick him at two.
Yeah, totally agree with everything you said. And he was, you know, it's why we still always say in Sam we trust. And you saw something in him. And I kept going back to visions of, you know, movie Draft Day. He had a piece of paper in his pocket. Chet, no matter what. And despite what happened in that one pick, this was the plan, was to build around SGA. I know that was said earlier on the show or this morning on these airwaves, but that what Sam saw is what he can get out of Chet Holmgren is going to benefit not just Chet Holmgren and the Oklahoma City Thunder, but it's going to benefit SGA, Giddey, Dort. It's going to be a very fun combination moving forward.
Yeah, and I get the idea because we've seen SGA for a couple of years that you start out thinking he's the franchise cornerstone. I get that.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully not.
That's true.
Hopefully he's not. Hopefully this guy is supplants him, because what would be more fun? Because everyone thinks that SGA is a really good player. And he is a really good player. Borderline all-star type of player right now in his young career. Okay? What's wrong with having somebody better than that? Nothing,
yeah,
I'll tell you.
Yeah, absolutely nothing.
Then instead of one, you got two. You know, Giddey, he's still going to have to work on knocking down the outside shot. You know, his stroke from the free throw line looked better. Looked like he'd been working. He's still just scratching the surface. And I think, you know, this is the part. And now listen, no one's sitting here saying, watch out, these guys are going to be just like that first group of Thunder players. That's not what we're saying at all. But what I will say is, for the first time since July the 4th of 2016, there was like some real true excitement about watching the Thunder play basketball again and starting to think about the possibilities. What if these guys all figure out a way to reach their ceilings as players? You know what I mean? Like you were throughout that first year of the Thunder being here, as those guys started to kind of gel a little bit. And then all of a sudden, after what, the 3-29 start, They end up winning 20 games, and you're going, that wasn't too bad there at the end. They all kind of grew up, and then, you know, next thing you know, they're winning 50 games the next year and the darlings of the league. That's lofty expectations. But for the first time in for sure 2 years, and the reason I say all the way back to when Kevin Durant left, is because even watching Westbrook and watching Paul George later on and all that, you still knew that they weren't going anywhere. They're not winning the title. You know, they're going to make the playoffs, but they're, you know what I'm saying? There was a ceiling that was already pretty established for that group. And that's the fun part of being young. There's no reason to put a ceiling on any of these guys because they're all so young in their development. And I think that's what, to me, is super exciting.
Yeah, it's a different – you're right, a different type of excitement. And it because it's different, because we've experienced excitement before in that first iteration of the Thunder and that magical run many years ago. And I was like, okay, we know how to – we've been through this. Now let's get back. And it's a different type of excitement. Like a veteran, like we're veteran fans now, you know, because every franchise goes through that. I mean, of their ups and their downs and their rebuilds. Oklahoma City hasn't had to experience a rebuild like Oklahoma City has just experienced. And now it seems like we're ready to get back into the winning culture that was established as soon as they got here. Now, the question is, after one summer league game, is the tanking done? Does that answer the question yet? Or are we still, is it still a, well, let's get 10, 15 games into the season and then we'll see?
Yeah, that is the question, right? I mean, health is going to play a huge part of that. You know, if those guys, really and truly, I'm afraid if those guys, if they stay healthy, I'm afraid they're too good. Because, I mean, when you're talking about tanking, you're talking about doing what the Thunder have done the last 2 years to try to get the top pick, or as high as a pick as you can get, right?
Right.
I'm afraid they're too good for that. I just don't know if they're going to be good enough to be any more than like a play-in type team. I mean, even with all the excitement we saw last night, you know, there's lots of fun, but what are they winning, 30 games, 35 games, maybe? You know, I mean, it's not like, hey, oh, 50 wins, here we go. What seed does that give us? Are we the third seed? Are we the fourth seed? Do we get home court the first? That's not where this is headed yet. But the problem is I don't think it can head to the cellar like it has the last 2 years. And another thing is it's at some point, as the Thunder get better and as they play more important games later on in the season, at some point you've got to see if Shai Gilgeous-Alexander can make it through a whole season, stamina-wise, to be the guy that everybody wants him to be in the playoffs, right?
Right.
You know, it's just the last 2 years he hasn't got there. You know, and how do they react to playing games that matter in the end of February through the month of March, heading into the playoffs in April, versus what's been happening when you get shut down right after Valentine's Day. You know, so there's a lot of reason to play this season out, even if it doesn't result in a playoff appearance, just to build for the next year.
Mm-hmm.
When you get somebody else or what have you, you can start making moves. And, oh, by the way, at that point, you know what the CBA looks like. You know, because all that, and who knows, you know, going into, I think a lot of people around the league are starting to hear this and gaining momentum on it. A lot of people around the league are starting to expect there to be a lockout by the owners because of the just what's happening, you know, with all this movement and all this. Kevin Durant's getting out of a situation that he hasn't even started a contract extension at. Or demanding to get out, or asking, requesting, I guess is a better word. So, you know, that all those things, and you know what? And it seems like every time one of these things has come up, it's always been at the Thunder's detriment. Just wrong place, wrong time, you know, with a lot of different things. The good thing about this time is there's really no decisions to be made on players like there were in the past. and then things change and you go, oh man, we could have done this or couldn't. There's really none of those decisions to be made yet, because you've got the two guys that are eligible with Shea and obviously with Lou Dort, they're signed, you know, and then it looks to me like that, you know, Giddey's going to be a no brainer. You want to keep him around, you know, and Chet did what he did last night. We'll see what he does, but it looks like get used to that four. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then you figure out, is Jalen Williams the guy? He looked pretty good last night with 17, shot the ball pretty well. You know, but then you get – but the good part of it is, with the timing of where this build is going, you don't have to start making those decisions on who to fill around and how much money to pay and all that stuff until you know what the CBA is. And that's the advantage the Thunder have this time that they really didn't have the last couple of times.
Very true. Yep.
Having said all that, you know what the coolest part of last night was?
What's that?
So Chet demanded Josh Giddey be alongside him in the post-game interview.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
After the game.
Right.
With Holly Rowe. Demanded. Like, I'm not doing it unless he can be there with me.
Simple request.
Unselfish.
Yeah, had a double-double. You recognize his
double-double assist, 14 and 11.
Was the same game, recognizes game? Or, yeah, he were in. That's a. It's humble. It's. I know what Chet's doing. He quickly wants to establish a rapport with this guy, a relationship, and show, hey, let's work together because we're going to be here for a while. You know, so that's nice to see. Now, you want my critique?
Yeah.
When Holmgren went down with the injury, they took him out, and, you know, he was fine. I got a glimpse of his shoes. He's wearing KDs.
Oh, well. Well.
Maybe if he gets good enough, he can get his own shoe.
There's not a lot he can do right now.
I was like,
I mean, you couldn't put on the Russes.
And I'm sure there are other members of the Thunder who are wearing KDs. But as soon as the first thing I saw was the KD logo on the front of the shoe. Okay. That's why if we're going to critique this guy, that's about my one critique. Everything else was good. It was a great showing. It's exciting.
I
wonder how much he plays today. You know what I mean? He went the full length last night. You see what I'm saying? Or do they want, you know, a back-to-back? I mean, do you need – or is it a matter of easing him into something like that, into the rigors of an NBA schedule and a back-to-back?
Oh, I'm sure he'll go and play. Okay. As long as he doesn't wake up and the ankle, you know, twisted and it doesn't hurt.
Right.
Or what have you.
Thoughts about Poku? Did he look better to you?
Yeah, I mean, he's still just so young.
Yeah, he's still a young guy. We got to remind ourselves of that.
He's still so young. It looked kind of funky out there with both of them because they have a similar style. I think Chet's got a little bit more, if you want to call it, bruiser in him. I mean, it's not like he had a ton, but he's got a little bit more of that physical style. I think that's just part of that is growing up here versus where, you know, in Serbia, where it's more a little bit more flashy, a little bit more, you know, pizzazz to the game like Poku does. And, you know, he had the one turnover where he kind of went, what in the world? But you could see what he was doing. He thought, and it was Jalen Williams, the Santa Clara one, that was making a cut, but instead of keeping going down the lane, he flared out to the corner, and Poku kind of lobbed it to where he thought he was going to be to just catch it and lay it in or what have you, or dunk it or whatnot. But, you know, but he didn't have that. He didn't have one of those plays last night that you're seeing over and over on Twitter like he did a bunch last year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a good thing, by the way. Most of those plays you got to see were horrible ones. Every now and then a pretty cool one, but for the most part, horrible ones. But, yeah, I thought he looked better. I mean, he ought to. I think that he's a guy that I don't see them giving up on. You know, we talked about who's going to be off the team, you know, to make way for some of these young guys that we're talking about right now. I don't think Poku's one of those. I really don't. He's not a guy to give up on yet. I don't think. Now, he's not a guy to pay a bunch of money to either. But you don't have to make that choice yet. And so I have a hard time believing that he's going to be kind of one of the casualties on this roster crunch. I just don't see it. And, you know, maybe that means he's down in the blue again. I know at the end of last year when he came back up from the blue, he looked like a better player. And maybe that's just kind of where he's at. You know, instead of sitting there languishing on the bench, give him minutes and then, you know, sporadically, you know, bring him up and see what he's learned.
Yeah.
You know, I think he's showing at the end of last year and then even last night, showing enough. I mean, he looked like he belonged. He didn't necessarily look like a star, but he didn't look out of place like he has at times in his NBA career so far. So, to me, that's a plus for the way he played last night.
Yeah.
You know,
you wanted to see improvement, and
you know, I mean, and you can see he's another one, man. You can see the skill that he possesses. It's just a matter of putting it together. You know, he's leaning in, knocking down that 1-3, and it's like, man, there it is. You know, he makes. You could tell he knows his IQ is huge playing basketball. He knows where the ball needs to go. He's an excellent passer, and I think sometimes some of these plays that he does that he gets made fun of. Or just because he's thinking like three steps ahead and he's away, he's thinking faster than everybody else. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And then it makes him look stupid because he did it. And you're like, well, there it was. I mean, if he had the right idea, it's just that nobody else had it, you know, at the same time. So definitely not a give up on him yet at all. Just see where he goes. See how he progresses.
Yeah.
And, man, isn't it funny? Two guys, 7 foot tall or bigger, and I don't think either one of them ever caught it down on the block with their back to the basket all night long. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
They were never. Excuse me. They were never posted. Thurl Bailey even made that comment. Like, I don't think we've seen them guys catch it in the block yet.
Yeah.
Nope.
No.
It's a different world. But for the first time in a while. An exciting world in Thunderland.
Yep.
Courtesy of one incredible Chet Holmgren performance. First player ever in Summer League with 4 threes and 5 blocks. He had 6 blocks. That's a record also. Hey, you know what's coming up Saturday, Jared?
Yes, I do.
What is it?
It is the KECO Open.
It is. 25th annual KECO Moran Equipment Open Golf Tournament. Listen. Listen up. Give us a ring. We may, I'm not guaranteeing you, but we may have a spot or two that comes available. It'll be an afternoon spot, afternoon tea time, but we may. The only way that you'll know for sure is if you get your name on that list that I have compiled that I'm going through right now to move some teams in to A, B, and C flight. It'd be A, B, and C flight, not championship. So give us a ring, 225-9696. Give us a ring, and we'll put you on that list. And then you never know. You may get a call back here this afternoon to tell you, voila, you have made it into the field. So give us a call, 225-9696. We'll mark you down on the list, and then as we know exactly how many of these spots are going to be available. I mean, it's one of those, if you don't ask, you don't get, right?
Right, right.
And so if you don't get your name on there, then there's no way that you're ever going to get a spot. But if you do, at least gives you a chance, because it looks like we may have a couple of extra spots available. They're in A, B, and C flight, so give us a call, we'll mark you down, and then let you know for sure how that went.
Don't miss out, and you're right. Get on the list at least.
Yeah. I mean, there's just no way you can do it without being on the list.
Try.
All right. So we talked yesterday about the possibility of Pac-12 teams making their way into the Big 12. And about 20 or 30 minutes after we got off the air, Dennis Dodd of CBS Sports fired out a tweet and an article talking about No. The Big 12 is meeting with 6 Pac-12 schools. It was the 4 we talked about yesterday, both Arizona's, Utah and Colorado, but also adding, I know one of our texters mentioned this name, and he was exactly right, and the Big 12 agreed, Oregon and Washington are also in those talks.
Something you were pushing.
Yes.
Something
well,
really, yeah.
I mean, it
made a lot of sense.
It makes sense from what matters, which is the TV money.
Right.
And the biggest draw of that group is clearly Oregon. As far as the brand goes, Washington's been around. They're probably the second one. So you're probably, really and truly, between those four that you're already talking to, you're probably getting two better candidates if you could sway Oregon and Washington. It appears like those two schools would like to wait out. There's a 30-day window here for the Pac-12 itself to negotiate with Fox. I've seen reports that Fox is out of the Pac-12 business.
Yep.
Right now. And so the Pac-12 itself. And so I don't know if that's just kind of a one last Hail Mary that Oregon and Washington are trying to use to stay the Pac-12. But it does look like a Hail Mary that's not gonna be answered. And so, man, how crazy is if I would have told? I know I said this yesterday. I'm going to make it even go further today. If I would have told you this time last year, as we're learning of Oklahoma and Texas exiting the Big 12, if I'd have told you that, mm-hmm. and then Jared, I would have went. But guess what? The Big 12, while not being maybe as financially attractive to TV partners because of losing Oklahoma and Texas, they're not going to be way far behind. Because here's what's going to happen. They're going to kill the Pac-12. They're going to put the stake in its heart anyway after USC and UCLA leave. And the Big 12, Jared, is going to be the first conference with 20 teams in it. What would you have said?
I would have laughed right back at you. So that's a funny joke. It's because, what was it, a year ago, everyone thought the Big 12 was dead to rights. They thought that's it.
We're having discussions of, okay, where is the best place for everybody else to land?
Exactly.
Is there a place for Kansas State to land? Kansas, because, you know, it's funny. I saw a meme or a chart last night talking about all the teams that have not won a New Year's Six Bowl since Kansas has.
Yeah, I saw that.
There's an amazing amount of teams on there that you wouldn't think would be there.
Including the U.
There's a bunch of them.
Yeah.
But anyhow, you know, it's amazing how this has happened. It has turned completely on its head. What it shows you, one, is just how terribly ran the Pac-12 has been from a financial standpoint, from all these TV deals. Larry Scott was terrible. And he was supposed to be the poster boy of, hey, look at us. We're going to stream our games to China because that's where the money's at. Somebody needs to tell the Chinese what college football is. Apparently, that's not working, you know. And so, like all these that the smart people thought were smart moves turned out to not be, and now the Pac-12 is dead. I mean, it's dead no matter what, right?
It definitely feels like that.
Why would Fox pay them a dime when they can just pay the Big 12 with a minute? Makes no sense. No sense at all. And so I think that's what's going to happen. It looks like the momentum is there for it. It looks like the Big 12, for the first time ever in any of this conference realignment stuff, is actually taking the bull by the horns and seizing the opportunity to gain at someone else's expense. It's never been that way. It's always been, let's sit back and see. Now, right now, it appears that that's not the way it's going, and the Big 12 is really being proactive, trying to get this done, because at that point, that solidifies them for something. Now, what is that something?
Right. Do you think the proactive approach is because of new leadership? You know, the new guy, I don't even know his name yet. Is that new?
It's Brett.
Compared to Bowlesby, Bowlesby was more of a wait-and-see guy, maybe. And
how about this
guy is like, you know what? We've got to grab the bull by the horns here, because that's kind of what, you know, he came from a cutthroat business. And if you get caught looking, you could be in serious trouble. And plus, he was like, man, I got to keep this conference alive for the sake of my job because they just hired me. If the conference breaks down, I don't have a job. So he's being very proactive, making phone calls as soon as the UCLA-USC news dropped.
How about this? How about no matter who the commissioner is, they're actually getting to do their job and not being told what to do?
Oh, by our friends down south.
And OU.
And OU, yeah.
By those two.
That's a good point, too.
How about if those two moving aside has allowed the conference as a whole to work and make decisions for the conference's best well-being, not necessarily Oklahoma and Texas's best well-being?
Right. Yeah, I can totally see that. I can totally see the Big Two not wanting an Oregon
to share more of the pie.
Exactly that. Well, ultimately that. Ultimately that, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think there's something to that, just a little bit of it anyway.
Yeah.
I also think that when you look...
Because this conference, sorry to interrupt, but this conference right now, there is no major player. Everyone's kind of on an even keel when you take those Big Two out of it. Am I wrong?
Financially, branding-wise, yes. No, you're 100% right. There's not that... I mean, there's better football programs than others, no doubt.
Well, yeah.
But there isn't that... I mean, Oregon probably as close as it gets. Oregon, but are they? Oklahoma State? They're pretty similar in that regard, outside of the fact that...
How does Oregon work? Do they look at Phil Knight for answers?
Maybe.
When an invite is you know, given to them to join the Big 12, are they looking at the university president, or is the president looking over his shoulder at Phil Knight? Phil, what do you think?
I would imagine it's all kind of working together at some point,
right?
I don't know if you tell Phil Knight no, but I don't know if you give him the reins to the program either.
Sure,
maybe similar to what we saw in Stillwater with
Boone
Pickens.
It's a similar situation, I think,
and all over the country. There's
always a big booster and a big name somewhere attached to a school. Sure,
and they all have a certain amount of access and a certain amount of maybe even say in decisions. So where does it end? Where is this all headed? Because I have been thinking about this, and I think listening to Mark at 11, he's kind of on the same boat that I am, but I may even take it a little bit further. Because I think it's obvious you're getting things set up to have two major players. And two major players in everything. On the field, you're going to have the Big Ten, you're going to have the SEC. Off the field, you're going to have Fox, you're going to have ESPN. Fox is associated with the Big Ten, ESPN is the SEC. Now, what's left? Okay, it looks like there's a 20-team Big 12 out there that appears to be forming here sooner rather than later. Is there a chance? I think there's a chance that this could become a little bit like the NFL, whereas you're going to have the Big Ten and the Big 12, because of TV partnerships with Fox, kind of over here. And then you're going to have the SEC and the ACC kind of over here because they're on the ESPN train. Could we eventually, at the end of all of this, we end up having almost like two different playoffs? And then like a Super Bowl.
Kind of like an AFC playoff, NFC playoff.
Exactly. Kind of like the Fox playoff and the ESPN. And it just happens to be the SEC and the ACC on one side, the Big Ten and the Big 12 on the other.
Possibly. And you could have the champion of each conference play each other as a semifinal. And then you have a college Super Bowl.
So that gets you.
It's
that actually gets you to eight, a quote
two,
unquote,
four, yeah, I mean,
eight
I could,
team
yeah.
playoff where conference
well,
title game.
That's your playoff. Your conference title game is your quarterfinal, and then you take your, and maybe it rotates. You know, instead of it's always the Big 12 champ versus the ACC champ every year. It's a cross bracketing rotating system of some sorts. Does that make sense? Or, I mean, SEC and ACC. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
A little bit. Or if you wanted to get
it. Or by seeding. I mean,
or if you wanted to get it to 12, you could have. You could almost have the conference champions get byes.
Yeah.
Or if you do it more, like the old NFL style, you could have the ACC and the SEC champ get a bye, and then you fire four more in there from, yeah, seeding or a picking or rankings or whatever it is, to create that on one side, that on the other side.
Yeah.
Same thing with the Big 12 and the Big 10.
Or go back to eight. Let's just go back to eight. The first format we saw. You know, we'll talk about seeding.
Here's where that ain't happening, man.
You can't. Go ahead.
The SEC and the Big Ten are not going to go, we're limited to two. They're not going to go for that. You're not going to be able to limit them to two participants, because that model limits them to their title game.
Ah, yeah.
See what I'm saying? That ain't happening.
Yeah, they want
because
as
they,
much
because,
representation in a playoff as possible.
And I think they're going to be the ones to control this on however they want to do it. And so, that means they may even have the ability for, okay, here's what we're doing for our conference, but we're also maybe even in charge of the invites to the other league. So, okay, let's look here. And listen, it's not going to be fair. That's the first thing that everyone's got to get out of their minds. It ain't going to be fair. The SEC and the Big Ten are going to hold all the cards because mm-hmm. they right now hold so much of the money because of the TV contracts that they've signed. And so, you know, it may be a, okay, if we're doing, if this is the model, and you've got six in the SEC playoff, six in the Big Ten playoff, to figure out who's going to play in the quote-unquote Super Bowl, it may be four SECs to two ACCs. It may be five SECs to, you know, it may be four 1-1. You know, let's say, well, it's going to be hard to find a mid-major anymore because they're all going to be in a conference. I mean, a lot of those, like the Big 12, scooped up kind of the ones that you would look to fill that void of being the little guy. And so the little guy may just be done. There may not be there's not going to be a Cinderella story anymore. It's over. Watch the basketball tournament for that, you know?
Yeah.
But I think that would be super interesting and generate bukus of dollars. But is it too much like the NFL? I mean, what I'm talking about right there was almost the exact NFL model.
Yeah, it's when you got players with NIL deals that are already getting bukus of money personally. That was the start of it. It feels that's why I felt like we're on a way to a semi-pro league in college, in the college game. I mean, it's kind of sad. It's kind of what Al was talking about yesterday and Sam Mays. It feels kind of sad because it takes will it take away the pageantry of college football and that feeling? I think that remains to be seen. I mean, there's still going to be tailgates and there's still going to be Saturday mornings and in that crisp air and, you know, the feeling you get when you go to a game. That's still always going to be there, but will that pageantry go away? I don't know. But it is getting the line between amateur athlete and pro athlete is definitely blurred. It's getting blurrier more and more we get closer to these giant conferences and coupled with the NIL deals.
I think that's right. I think it's going to be a function of when you give it away, when you basically give your sport away for money, that's what you're going to get. And, you know, college football is such an interesting thing because of the history of it. I mean, it's like they still haven't figured out how they want to crown a champ, right? I mean, like the best way to do it. They've gotten better, it seems like, every time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because clearly the BCS was better than nobody ever playing each other in bowl games, you know?
Right.
And from there, you know, got to the playoff that at least – you know, the games haven't been overly competitive in the semifinals, but we've gotten some good final, you know, championship games. We've gotten some duds when certain teams are just better than everybody else, but at least you got to see it. And so what's next? I mean, the next thing maybe is what gets it to where it needs to be, where it is inclusive, but it's also exclusive all at the same time. And, I mean, it feels like there's a chance that it could sort of go backwards if TV won't agree and the SEC and the Big Ten won't agree. It feels like we might have a Big Ten champ and an SEC champ both claiming national titles. You know what I mean? Like, once this next playoff, you know, just after a couple years, whatever it's going to be, maybe it's nothing. You know, you hope it's not nothing because you hope to keep on getting it better. But I do think there is a chance that it goes backwards to where now we're going to have two champions every year or two claiming it. And, you know, I hope we don't.
Right.
I hope we're not back to not getting to see that game, you know.
Yeah.
Because it kind of feels like with the way this is all setting up, there's clearly going to be two factions. And if you want to call it the AFC and the NFC, it kind of feels like that. You know, the South versus the North. I mean, that's a weird reference, but that's what it feels like in a lot of ways, at least on in the meeting rooms and in the conversation. It's going to be Big Ten versus SEC. And you just hope that they don't get so stubborn that they're not able to make, because they're already trying to ruin it for the fans because of, like you said, it's become more sterile. It's not as it doesn't feel as the pageantry and the emotion and the passion for it. I mean, it's still there, but in different ways. And you just hope they can come together and not just completely screw over the fans over some money.
Yeah.
How much faith do you have that that's not going to happen?
That it's not, the pageantry is not going to go away, or
yeah, that they're not going to screw the fans any more than they're already doing it.
I'm honestly not a lot of faith. It's harder and harder to me, anyways. This is just a personal opinion. It's harder and harder to, you know, we're going to root for our teams. Everyone's going to have that affection and that connection to that school, either they attended or they've grown up rooting for. But it's harder and harder to get really, really excited at times because of, I mean, just look at this most recent offseason. The transfer portal was wild. And it's always going to be a thing. And so why should I invest my emotions and root for a kid that I'm thinking he is one push up away from being mad and entering the transfer portal or getting benched because he made a bad play and he hurt his feelings and he's gone? So it's hard, you know what I mean? So that's where I think the pageantry and the passion could wane a little bit.
Yeah. And especially if you're not getting what you want at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. I could put up with Timmy going somewhere else because he got mad because Tommy came. And, oh, by the way, we're playing in the Super Bowl. Or we're playing, you know, in the conference finals.
Right.
As opposed to, oh, really? We're not even going to get to play the other best team from the other part of the country? Well, thank you. Wrapping it up here on a Wednesday with some Little League baseball. We talked, the softball state tournament was held, 2 weeks ago now?
It's already been 2 weeks.
Yeah, all across the state of Oklahoma. This week is regionals, so it's a little bit different in the baseball. You've got to go through a regional tournament in order to get to next week's state tournaments. I'm sure it's the same way in all of them. Two teams from all the regionals make it, so whoever plays in the finals of the regional tournament, both go to state, but then it determines the winner and the loser determines which bracket you start out in once you get to that state tournament. So most of it starts tomorrow, with the lone exception of, at least for the teams around here, the 10U bracket over in Weatherford, which 10U is Pee Wee, so it's the first year that the first couple of years the kids pitch. Okay. So 10U at Weatherford going on 2 days, starting at 1:00. The Merritt Drillers will take on the Woodward Rangers. It's a 1:00 start. Now, the loser of that will fall into the loser's bracket and won't play again until tomorrow. The winners, though, will play the Weatherford Bulldogs at 6:15. And that the night games put you into tomorrow, where you win and you're in state. because that would qualify you for the finals. So that's how close it is. So Woodward and Merritt playing at 1 o'clock. The winner will play Weatherford Bulldogs at 6:15. Wyatt Ray Compton and the Sayre Eagles will take on Clinton Maroon. That'll be a 2:45 game. Immediately following that, Arapahoe Indians and Visalia will play at 4:30. The winners will play at 8. So the winners of those two games will play at 8 o'clock. And then, like, same thing. You win two today, you go back over there to Weatherford tomorrow night at 8 o'clock with the chance to punch your ticket into the state tournament. So that's all. That's what's going on at Weatherford today in 10U. Starting tomorrow in 8U, which is coach pitch, over at Kingfisher, you got Riker Fennell and the Elk City Fire Frogs taking on Watonga at 5. Thomas and Alva will be right before that at 3:30. Cheyenne and Perry will be at 6:30. Weatherford and Kingfisher, 8 o'clock. So that whole regional is playing tomorrow there in Kingfisher. Staying in 8U over at Henrietta, the Hobart Hitmen will play Stigler tomorrow at 5 o'clock. And then the Altus Monkeys are in Vianne in the 8U. They take on the host Vianne Wolverines there at 8 o'clock tomorrow. 10U down in Elgin tomorrow. So they don't have as many teams as the Weatherford one does, so they don't have to start playing until tomorrow. Navajo will play Anadarko at 2:45. The winner plays the Hobart Sluggers. Hobart has been on a tear the last couple of weeks. Navajo's a good team, too. That's a young a lot of these are second-year teams. That Navajo team is a first-year team, and they're fantastic. They're a good little bunch. So them and Anadarko, winner play Hobart. And then 12U, which is Midgets, up in Woodward starting tomorrow. You got Moreland and Cheyenne at 3:30. The winner of that, and they'll play the Elk City Crushers at 6:30. Then you got the Mangum Cubs and the Clinton Reds at 5. The winner will play the Alva Renegades at 8. So we'll try to keep you up to date who wins, who loses. I mean, I'll know a bunch of that as far as that one at Weatherford, that 10U tournament in Weatherford, but then everybody else getting going tomorrow. I mean, like we talked about with the softball, once we get around to the state tournaments, there'll be a bunch of these teams from Western Oklahoma that will be represented in those different classifications of the state tournament.
Absolutely. Good luck to everybody. All those kiddos. Stay hydrated. It's going to be hot. It's going to be hot. Drink that Gatorade. Water.
Either one.
Body Armor. I don't know. Whatever you like.
Either one. What's your favorite what's your favorite flavor of Gatorade?
Man, I'm old school. Lemon lime.
Is that the yellow one?
That's the yellow one. Yeah.
I like the yellow one. You know what? I don't think they make it anymore. Do you remember Citrus Cooler?
Sure. Yes.
It's MJ's favorite.
Yes, I remember that.
I always liked Citrus Cooler.
Yeah, lemon lime is my go-to Gatorade.
Probably mine as well. I'd probably have to agree with that, with the lemon lime. I don't know. Some of the darker blue ones pretty good. I like the grape.
My kid likes the blue. I don't know what the flavor is.
Is it a light blue or a dark blue?
It's a darker blue. We've tried to sneak in the sugar-free.
Yeah, don't do it.
The zero.
Zero. Uh-uh.
She sees that, goes, nope.
That's what I do.
Don't like it.
If I ever decide to drink a Gatorade and I see a zero, I'll just throw it back in the cooler. No, thank you. Who in the world would want to drink that?
Well, if it's 120 outside, I'll drink it.
It's not very good. It's not very good. All right. So.
Yeah, our worst mistake was teaching our kid how to read because she can see zero. Nope.
It also takes away spelling things.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Once they learn how to spell and read, and it takes away some of the.
It's over. Yeah.
Some of the incognito stuff.
Yeah. No, so, well, good luck. Yeah, again, seriously, though, it's going to be hot, 100 degree for, like, the rest of the week, going into the weekend. So, stay hydrated, get those frog togs ready. I've always wanted to find a portable mister system and put them in a dugout, but I'm afraid it would get gloves wet and stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You kind of have to be strategic with that.
Everybody be throwing their bats around because they can't hold on to them.
Yeah. But that's, you know, that's the main concern. Is keeping those kids safe and healthy. And we hope they have fun. This is a fun time of their lives.
At what point do we get to start chanting MVP to Chet Holmgren?
Well, I mean, if if last night was any indication, I would say 3-4 years, if he continues to play at a high level like that or gets better, which is hard to imagine. I mean, this is summer league and it's not the best obviously best competition, but if he gets better and settles into the game at this high level, sure, 3-4 years, I can envision that.
I was going to go ahead and say today. Fire him up, Utah fans.
I'm very hopeful, but I'm more trying to be a realist about it.
I wish, you know? I'm going to have to look at this later and have it for tomorrow, but I wish I would have looked at the draft night rookie of the year odds and compare them to after last night's.
Right now, yeah, I think he's the favorite.
And he was nowhere near the favorite when they came out.
No, right now Vegas has him as the favorite. And that's reactionary. A bunch of money's being thrown on it, and I get
it. Sure.
I get it. But, I mean, he has a lot. What I took away from last night was he didn't look nervous. He looked like he was ready to get out there and play. He was having fun. And ultimately, he was very confident.
And you know what? All 23 of those points came within the structure of the offense. He wasn't out there doing a bunch of stuff, trying to get his own shot all the time and all that. He was just playing basketball.
I like the transition game. After a block, after anything, it was go, go, go.
Yeah, there was one time where he blocked it and then ended up on a dunk on the other end, just like that.
Yeah, and that plays in what he was doing at Gonzaga.
That's right.
And the Thunder recognized that.
Yep. Wait till he grabs the defensive rebound, dribbles it all the way down the floor, and slams it home.
Wow.
I'll have the MVP chance started at that point. Everybody have a great Wednesday.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered to right. Way.